This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, chapters 25 and 26, The Egg and the Eye, and The Second Task. In these chapters, Moaning Myrtle is a perv.
Yes, she is. Go, Moaning Myrtle.
And we explore uncharted territory. Uncharted underwater aquatic territory.
Very cool. Very creepy and also very scary and traumatizing and just a bunch of things. Yeah, words for that.
Did you ever think that we would explore the lake in this series?
No, I'm excited though, because it's like, you know, there are goings on in the lake. And I think I remember a long time ago, I said I thought the giant squid would be scary. And you're like, giant squid's nice. So another world. So exciting, another world.
Yeah, although I was a little disappointed by like all this, you know, stuff around the giant squid, and he didn't show up once when Harry was at the lake. Like, did Dumbledore specifically tell the squid, you know, you kind of need to keep scarce while they're doing the tournament?
That, you know what, that's so funny you mentioned that, because I was thinking that maybe the squid would like float by or something, and nothing. He mentions it, and then they just blow right past it to the merpeople.
But first, before we get to the lake, we get the prefect's bathroom. So Harry has finally broken down and has decided he's going to use Cedric's advice because he has procrastinated and has very little options at this point.
Yeah, he has to put his pride away, and he kind of swallowed his pride last chapter, and now he is going to the bathtub. It's just such a funny scene for me to imagine with this egg.
Yeah, no, it's just kind of funny that Harry is breaking a hell of a lot of rules unnecessarily. Like, he literally could have used his, like, dormitory bathroom and just told the boys, like, go away, do not disturb. Like it did not have to be this whole affair.
That's a really interesting point, because he does go and sneak off and he makes it, like, very dramatic. And part of me thought that he was just super self-conscious about doing this, like, especially if it didn't work. But the other part of me just didn't think too much about it, just like he wanted some privacy. I guess we don't really get into like the bathing habits at Hogwarts. So
no, we don't. We're not in a position to make an accurate assessment on whether Harry's desire to use the prefect's bathroom is completely over the top. Given the fact that Cedric offered this to him, makes me think that, yeah, Cedric knows that the normal bathrooms aren't a place you want to do this.
It must be. And it's giving me flashbacks to living in the dorms.
Or is Hogwarts really skimpy and they only have showers and not bathtubs?
That's kind of what I was wondering. For some reason, I'm like, since I'm thinking about this, I'm just assuming everybody is showering. But it's also not something I've given a lot of thought to until these moments where Harry is very detailed taking a bath and talking about how the bubbles are covering him up and stuff too. I was like, all right, whatever. That's good for you.
I'm one of those people where if I walk into the hotel bathroom and it's just a shower, I get really pissed off because I want a bathtub to be able to soak in and listen to a podcast or an audiobook, and I want to stay there as long as I want and fill it up as much as I want. And so when it's just a shower, I get very put out.
That is interesting. That's that is a very restorative kind of thing. I'm now you're making me think about when I used to travel more for work. I did that as well. So it was delightful. I had like a CBD bath bomb one time. It was super chill. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, shower, bath. And the only other ones, I did actually live with the Bedouins for a few days, like half an hour from the Syrian border. And so literally no bathtub, just like this sort of like sauna-like room where you just have buckets and you're just pouring it on yourself.
Oh my gosh.
It's actually very zen in some cases. But yeah, like I couldn't do that long term, but yeah.
I think you need to write a book just about all your travels because you're the woman of a million stories.
My family physician in Oregon, every time I would go to get a checkup, she's like, when are you writing your memoir?
Yeah, for sure. I'm not saying that just to flatter you. I think it would be interesting.
Anyway, bathing habits aside.
Monique Myrtle's super into them anyway.
Yeah, bathing habits aside, Harry goes to the prefect's bathroom. And which is hidden behind the portrait of Boris the Bewildered? Yes. A lost-looking wizard with his gloves on the wrong hands. And so again, this is a really dope bathroom. Very much reminds me of some of the Turkish baths I've been in both Jordan and Turkey itself. Very awesome.
Sounds fancy. I can imagine.
And they served you berry slushies while you were in the bathhouse, and it was awesome.
That sounds awesome. That's what Harry needs in these moments. Also, yep. He could have like draped the invisibility cloak. Oh, that just made me think of a question. I'll save it, but related to the invisibility cloak and ghost.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, because Moody can see through it, but I didn't know if like Myrtle could see through it.
I don't think they can.
Okay.
But so Harry is thinking it would be worth it being a prefect just to be able to use this bathroom because it's so epic and it's like basically the size of a swimming pool and it's lined with all these different faucets and tabs. And
that's pretty fancy.
So my very important question to you is what would your ideal bubbles look like? What would they smell like? And what sort of magical feature would they have?
Oh my gosh, this is like the best question that I feel like I could use, like take an hour to think about. For some reason, like a purple color to the bubbles. I think that because purple is my favorite color. And what magical capability would they have? I almost said something, but it's super sexist and body shamey about myself, so I'm not going to say it. I think it would just be like, you know, a lot of people take baths to relax. I would like something to energize me because I run pretty like sleepy generally. Mm-hmm. So I would like something, the magic ability to be that. And what would it smell like? It would smell like the air in Hawaii. That's what I think it would smell. So what about you?
I would want them to be heart-shaped.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah,
I want them to be float around, be heart-shaped. I would want them to smell like lemon verbena. Those are so good.
Absolutely.
Or in this specific season of November, I wouldn't mind pumpkin spice heart-shaped bubbles either.
That I love that. That's very...
Or basic bitch. And their special magical feature, I just wish there was a... My skin is really oily, like around my face. I wish there was something that could help that.
I like it.
Or something that could, like, I have all these minuscule, like, blackheads on my nose and cheeks.
Okay.
That they're so small, like, it, like, I would have to, like, go to a dermatologist to, like, you know, get them, like, really extracted. Like, no normal store-bought thing is going to make them go away. If those could magically vanish, that'd be awesome. But
I think we both came up with, like, amazing bath bombs, if that could exist. That would, and bubble bath or whatever. That would be great.
Bath and Body Works, copyright, don't you dare take it, I'll come for you.
Exactly, yeah, me too.
So Harry's playing with all the taps and using the various bubbles and stuff, and so then he starts pondering, and he's like, he's just wondering, what the hell did Cedric mean? And then a voice comes out, I tried putting it in the water if I were you.
Pervy moaning Myrtle back again. I was surprised when she showed up because I didn't really suspect her to make another appearance this soon.
Yeah, so I feel like a lot of the Harry Potter books, they follow a pattern where it takes two books to see a certain character again. Like the same with Dobby. We've only seen him again from book two, now in book four. So there's a lot of that where certain secondary characters will skip a book and then they'll come back.
Okay, interesting. Well, she makes quite the appearance, kind of trying to help Harry with this by observing Cedric.
Myrtle, said Harry in outrage, I'm not wearing anything. I closed my eyes when you got in.
And then she's like kind of flipping out because he hasn't, she's whining to him that he hasn't come by to see her. Like, she's a real treat to come visit. But while she's apparently averting her eyes while he got changed, which I feel like she said that with a laugh, she's also upset with him.
Yeah. This scene, both in the book and in the movie, has not aged well. In terms of, us in the Me Too, thinking more critically about sexual harassment and things like that. And also in the sense of just because it's a girl, that doesn't, there's no way you could play this for laughs if it were the opposite, if the genders were reversed.
That's an excellent point.
So there's so many comedic things that if it was flipped, no one would think that would not be appropriate in polite society. Myrtle. I want to feel bad for her, but she's just one of those people who just revels in misery and, again, doesn't try to help herself to the point that people want to give her a chance.
Right. Yeah, there becomes a point where you kind of are thinking, you need to help yourself, Myrtle, instead of fussing to everybody.
But in essence, Myrtle tells him you should put it under the water. That's what Cedric Diggory did. And so Harry does. And upon doing so, the egg no longer shrieks and wails, but it's now, speaking in English. And it's now speaking something that he understands. And it's this poem. What were your thoughts?
Do you want me to read this? The come and seek... I'll read it.
Yeah.
I'll read it. Come and seek us where our voices sound. We cannot sing above the ground. And while you're searching, ponder this. We've taken what you'll sorely miss. An hour long you'll have to look and to recover what we took. But past an hour, the prospect's black. Too late, it's gone, it won't come back. This is very dark. I say that a million times every episode, I know that. But of course, initially, the thing that you think that's going to be taken is an object. So I was thinking, what's Harry's most prized object? And I thought maybe a picture of his parents. That's the only thing I could get. But as far as what the egg was saying, I kind of assumed that it would involve the sirens or the Vahila. I always screw up that name.
The Vila.
And it kind of didn't. I didn't really know that they would be diving into the lake based on this. So
yeah. But Harry finally is like, he looks at the portrait of the mermaid and he's like, Myrtle, there aren't mer people in there, are there? Ooh, very good, she said. It took Diggory much longer than that, and that was with her awake too, giggling and showing off and flashing her fins. So that's it. The second task is to go and find the mer people in the lake.
The mer people in the lake, which end up not being as I think Harry just assuming he's a cisgender heterosexual male, he is not too upset about that, seeing that picture on the, of the mermaid kind of flirting and whatever. I don't know how much familiarity they have with mer people. I don't know if it's like a common knowledge or if it's something they've studied yet. I don't know.
Yeah, we haven't heard of it before. And certainly even in the context of just the lake that they live in, this lake, we've heard more about the giant squid. No one has said shit yet about mer people.
That's, okay. Because I feel like if there were a group of mer people that were just hanging out in the lake, somebody would be like, and the mer people live down there. But I didn't know if they're just doing this as part of the Triwizard Tournament, or they actually take residence there.
I don't know. I think it's implied from the second task and with Dumbledore that they live there full time, and they did this to do Dumbledore a solid.
Pretty scary solid there, Merpeople, but that's all right.
So Harry is just like, Myrtle, how am I supposed to breathe? And that Myrtle just like asking for me how to breathe when you know I can't.
I know people like this. Like, I know a person, like, it's always something, and it's always related to them, and it's like,
No shade to vegetarians, but this is kind of the stereotypical of the stereotype of like the vigilante vegetarian, where if you like either offer, you know, like meat, they just go all in a huff.
That's funny. And they give people like me a bad name because I just am like, I just don't eat meat. Like, it's fine. It's pretty straightforward there. But I don't know. I definitely am thinking a very specific person in my life that does this, and it's just, you know, I had a bad day. I'm not just trying to tell you about my bad day. I'm not trying to make you feel worse. It's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, and Myrtle is very self-centered, because again, this isn't about her. Like, yeah, she couldn't even say that Harry's tactless or whatever, and she just goes into a whole rant about how she haunted the girl who found her dead, like to the point that the Ministry of Magic had to stop her from stalking that girl, and finally she came back to Hogwarts.
I like that this book has definitely given more backstory on some of these characters, because that story made Moaning Myrtle even less likable. Like, I think there's a desire, I know within myself, just because I'm fairly empathetic, that if there's somebody that's like upset or hurting, you want to help them or you want to hear them out, whatever. And then, so I think that's the initial reaction to Myrtle. And then as the character builds, it's like, you suck. You just need some help. You're a weirdo. You're not a nice entity. Like, come on, lady.
So Harry decides that, you know, the egg has told him all he wants, all it was going to tell him. And this is what Hermione suspected, that the egg would give him a clue, but it wouldn't spell everything out.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of cryptic. So, because now his focus is, how to breathe underwater.
Yeah, which they have not learned yet.
No, they haven't.
Yep. But that's only half of the drama in this chapter. The other half is while Harry is going back to Gryffindor Tower. He takes a look at his trusty Marauder's map to see if the close is clear, and who does he see poking around Snape's office? It's not Snape, but the map has him labeled as Bartemius Crouch.
Who is still, I cannot pin down what this guy's up to, but he is definitely in Snape's office doing something. Not probably doing anything on the up and up. It's not like he's leaving Snape a note to say, like, excellent poisons teaching or whatever. He's definitely, well, Snape does keep like some fairly, it's not illegal is the wrong word, but fairly like important stuff in his office.
Yeah, I always have it in my head canon that Snape has not only stuff for all levels, so even some of his like higher, like his highest level class, they would be dealing with some probably slightly dangerous stuff. But also, he's a potions master. I'm assuming he has a side hustle where he just, you know, brews his own stuff, whether it's for the hospital or for other things, where he just brews it on the side and people pay him for it. So yeah, I always thought of like him not just being restricted to his curriculum, that he has all types of shit that he wouldn't let any student touch.
That would make sense, given his character, and he's just always up to something.
So your immediate thought is that Crouch would specifically be looking for ingredients.
That's my best guess, because again, this is just like part of this book that I just cannot figure out what he's up to. And mm-hmm. I Crouch is, I don't know, for some reason I haven't like fleshed him out in my mind quite yet.
Yeah, so it's interesting, you know, Crouch is saying that he's so sick to the point that he's allowing Percy to take his place at the Yule Ball and other official events, but yet he's sneaking around Snape's office in the middle of the night.
Yeah, he's definitely up to something. I don't know. When I'm sick, I'm not creeping around in the middle of the night, like breaking into people's offices.
And I'm just thinking, like, for Crouch, if he needs potion ingredients, like some high-end stuff that's slightly restricted, isn't there a place in the ministry? Wouldn't it be, as a Ministry of Magic employee, wouldn't it be easier for him to go to, like, whatever the ministry, like, their potion stores or whatever? Or does Snape have something that only Snape has?
That is a good question, because you're right. The ministry would probably would have access to all kinds of things that Snape might not necessarily have, unless, which I think might be being implied here, the kids have always thought Snape has had some allegiance to Voldemort. And, you know, if it's something that is illegal or whatever, and this is just following the line of thinking of Snape's the villain, which I don't know how he might be a jerk, but I don't know if he's actually the villain, that might be the reason he has something kind of like Dark Mark related, Voldemort related. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. This is the storyline that throws me every time. And I know you ask pointed questions and I'm like, I have no idea.
No, I'm just so happy because I, you know, given to how spoiled you were for Prisoner of Azkaban, I'm so delighted about how unspoiled you are for this one, because this is a really complex mystery.
Okay, well, and I'm just as unspoiled for the rest, so
it's... Yeah. Nice. So anyway, so Harry's figuring this, trying to figure, like, what the hell, and he's thinking, I'm Harry Potter, so I'm gonna go down and figure out what Crouch is up to myself in my bathrobe.
Cute, Harry. Very cute. Not suspicious at all. At least he has the invisibility cloak with him.
But he's a dum-dum like Neville and gets his foot caught in the trick stair. And his egg goes bounce, bounce, bounce on the stone floor, you know, skidding across the landing and wailing because it opens. Does this make you think of, was there any sort of situation you had where, like, again, a really loud noise and just went off and you're just like, oh no, like the worst possible thing?
I just feel like that's my life. Like, all this stuff happens like at the inopportune times all the time. But I don't have like any famous moment historically. I think we've had some interesting little hiccups at conferences where a mic catches something that we're like, oh God, during a period of quiet. But nothing too terrible. Did a story come to mind for you?
I think it did, but again, we skipped a week, so I'm not sure I can remember it now. I can't think of anything at this point. I'm sure there's one. Maybe it'll come to me later. Long story short, Filch comes and thinks that, because he can't see Harry, because Harry, even though he's stuck, he's still under the invisibility cloak. Filch is thinking, oh, it's Peeves. I can get Filch, and not that I'm the biggest fan of Peeves either, but it's like Peeves is nowhere to be found.
Yeah, he just thinks Peeves is up to some craziness, and then he sees the egg.
Mm-hmm. And then who shows up but Snape?
Oh, yeah.
Snape in his... Yeah, he watched Filch draw near and near. Is Snape in his pajamas?
I don't know, because, like, what is Snape doing wandering around at night? Because I don't think Snape, like, is sleeping in his office, is he?
No, but Snape heard... Clearly, Snape heard a commotion, and so he knew someone was in his office.
Right. Okay.
It's as it seems.
Well, so the egg is one problem, but what else? Do they not come across the Marauder's map, too, or am I thinking about something...
No, so the Marauder's map is currently on the floor.
Okay, yes, okay.
Visible, out of reach of the invisibility cloak. And Harry can't reach it because, again, he's stuck.
Right, right.
So Snape is like, and when I passed my office, I saw that the torches were lit and a cupboard door was ajar. Someone had been searching for it. So Crouch was really sloppy.
Yeah, he must have been in a hurry, maybe. Mm-hmm.
And who do we... So we got Filch, we got Snape, and then who shows up?
Thank God Professor Moody shows up, which we know he's kind of always on Harry's side. So he definitely knows Harry's there, but he's not going to, like... At least we can hope he's not going to throw Harry under the bus or anything.
Yeah, so... And Harry's just like, oh my God, this guy can see me through the cloak. Holy shit. And did I hear that correctly, Snape? Someone broke into your office. It is unimportant, said Snape coldly. On the contrary, growled Moody, it is very important. Who'd want to break into your office? A student, I dare say, said Snape. Harry could see a vein flicking horribly on Snape's greasy temple. It has happened before. Potion ingredients have gone missing from my private store cupboard. Students attempting illicit mixtures, no doubt. Which is true, because Hermione stole from his private store for Polyjuice potion.
Yeah, I was going to say, for the thing that turned her into a cat. So he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. But what does it say that Snape at first is all huffy and it's like, you know, with Filch about, like, someone broke in my office, but he doesn't want to, like, overplay this to Moody.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because, like, he's in on it or he just doesn't want to seem like he doesn't have his, you know, his business together. I don't know.
Could Snape be in cahoots with Crouch for something and Crouch is going rogue? I don't know.
We don't.
Well, I do know, but.
You don't. No, I don't know. So I don't know is what I should say. I don't know.
Yeah. Reckon they were after potion ingredients, eh? Said Moody, not hiding anything else in your office, are you? You know I'm hiding nothing, Moody, he said in a soft and dangerous voice, as you've searched my office pretty thoroughly yourself.
Yeah, because these two have beef, kind of, right? Something happened.
So I think it goes to show is that, you know, both Snape's, you know, oh, did you hear Baby cry?
He was cute.
Yeah. You know, Snape, how he treats Moody, how Karkaroff treats Moody, and the fact that Snape and Karkaroff possibly know each other, you know, as we learned at the Yule Ball. So,
yes.
So, yeah, Snape and Karkaroff were basically, we can possibly see, were on opposing sides of Moody at some point in the past.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Whether that was more office politics or whatever, or some more serious shit. You do not know yet.
I do not know yet. I'm curious to know, and hopefully we'll find out.
And Moody says, you've dropped something, Snape, referring to the Marauder's map. And Harry is just, like, waving. He's like, it's mine! It's mine! Like,
right. It's like, cut it out, man. This is mine.
Yeah,
because Snape knows that who had that situation.
Yeah,
because
Snape knows exactly what the Marauder's map is. He used it when Remus left it in his office to go chase them past the Whomping Willow into the Shrieking Shack. So Snape knows, Harry knows that if Snape got a good look at this, which it seems he does a little bit and basically makes a correct estimation. And so Moody summons it before Snape can get it. And Snape's like, Potter, he said quietly. What's that? Said Moody calmly, folding up the map and pocketing it. Potter, said Snape, snarled, and he actually turned his head and stared right at the place where Harry was, as though he could suddenly see him. That egg is Potter's egg. That piece of parchment belongs to Potter. I have seen it before. I recognize it. Potter is here. Potter in his invisibility cloak. And Snape stretched his hands out like a blind man and began to move up the stairs. So just imagine how crazy Snape sounds, but he's not wrong.
Just people gaslighting Snape. He's like, Moody's like, what are you talking about? Like, stop always accusing Harry. But even freaking Moody knows, like, he's not wrong. He's right there. I don't quite feel bad for Snape, but
no.
I feel a little bad.
Yeah, it's... There's nothing there, Snape, barked Moody. But I'll be happy to tell the headmaster how quickly your mind jumped to Harry Potter. Meaning what? Snape turned again to look at Moody, his hand still outstretched, inches from Harry's chest. Meaning that Dumbledore's very interested to know who's got it in for that boy. And so am I, Snape. Very interested. Snape was looking down at Moody, and Harry couldn't see the expression on his face. For a moment, nobody moved or said anything. Then Snape slowly lowered his hands. I merely thought, said Snape in a voice of forced calm, that if Potter were wandering around after hours again, it is an unfortunate habit of his that he should be stopped for his own safety. Yeah, so what do you think of that passage?
I think I really did appreciate Moody's kind of having Harry's best interest and basically reminding Snape that this might not be the time to constantly be like, Harry Potter did this. It's like, maybe take a break for that, because the stuff is a little more serious than I think Snape's having it out for Harry. Like, there is something surrounding this situation that I'm not too clear on, but there is a fear that, what you know, Snape easily forgot that Harry's part of this Triwizard tournament, though he's not of age, and it was just a very odd situation.
Yeah, I like this passage because it reminds me of, again, the whole dynamic where everyone thinks Snape is the bad guy in book one, but it turns out that he was actually engaging in behaviors that, even though he's a dick to Harry, was still trying to protect him. And so, you know, Snape himself is kind of giving voice to this, even though he's doing it in, if we want to have a charitable interpretation of this, that he hates Harry's guts but doesn't want him dead, or again, doesn't want him snooping around after hours in light of the situation with the Goblet of Fire, and realizes how serious it is, and thinks Harry's just a dumb kid who doesn't care about how serious it is.
Right. Yeah. That Snape and Harry relationship, I'm sure there are things written about that. It's very complex.
There's a whole, like, literary criticism book devoted solely to Snape.
Really?
Yes.
Really? Interesting. So much in the Harry Potter world that I don't know about still.
Anyway, so Snape finally glides along. I don't know. I was just
blagging. Snapes along.
Snapes along. I don't know. I think I was thinking of, I don't know for what reason, I was envisioning Snape in, like, white pajamas with, like, his, like, a dark, like, bathrobe. So I just think of, like, a penguin.
Oh. like a very emo penguin. That's what Snape is in this moment.
A very emo hook-nosed penguin.
Yes. Yes.
And Moody, so he leaves, Filch leaves, and Moody's, like, close shave, Potter.
Yeah. So then they have the conversation about the map of Hogwarts, or the Marauder's map, which Moody hasn't encountered before, which is kind of interesting. I felt like this would be more prevalent.
No, and I think it's a testament to just, regardless of whether they paid attention directly in class, like, but Harry's father and Sirius and Remus are extremely powerful because they created this object when they were teenagers.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's impressing this old retired, like, hardened Auror who's filled half the cells in Azkaban.
Right. Yeah. So they kind of made something that it's just interested in the wizarding world, I think, could be very useful, especially to somebody who's, like, helped put bad people into Azkaban. I'm sure he could use this technology.
And Moody seems quite surprised when Harry tells him that it was Crouch in Snape's office.
Yeah, and he questions him, so that this, again, further confuses and complicates the whole, my unawareness as to what Crouch is up to, because Moody's reaction is like, are you sure about that? Not, you know, oh yeah, that guy's up to no good. It was just kind of more like, threw Moody off as well.
Yeah, and Moody basically says, put it this way, Potter. They say old Mad-Eye's obsessed with catching dark wizards, but I'm nothing, nothing compared to Barty Crouch.
Hmm. Interesting. So I guess we could, again, with the dark wizard theory and thinking Snape was not on the up and up, that might be what he's investigating, like, Snape's doings. But I don't know. It's really hard to think of Snape that way.
Yeah. And Harry's just like, you know, so many stuff has been happening, like the Dark Mark at the World Cup, the Death Eaters, you know, Crouch, you know, doing weird things. And Moody's like, you're a sharp boy, Potter. Very possible. You might consider being an Auror.
that made me think about probably not the thing that I'm supposed to be thinking about, but I was like, oh, interesting. They're like considering careers this early on. Cause I think it's so easy to get lost into the like magical world, but that element of societal structure that happens in Harry Potter, somebody's like, you'd be good at this job. I just thought that was a really interesting comment. It kind of takes a little step out of all the drama that's constantly swirling. And it gives Harry a little bit of like, okay, we don't think you're going to, you know, die at the hand of Voldemort, but you're going to make it to adulthood and you should be this. And anyway, that's what I took from that.
And the last thing Moody asks is, can I borrow the Marauder's map? And Harry feels obliged to say yes, because, you know, Moody just got him out of a tight spot.
Right. Now I wonder what Moody's going to do with that map, because he's pretty skilled.
Indeed. Good boy, I can make good use of this. This might be exactly what I've been looking for. Right, off to bed, Potter.
So,
yeah, the last thing Harry thinks about is, but somehow Harry thought as he got quietly into his four-poster 10 minutes later, the egg and the cloak now safely back in his trunk, he thought he'd like to check how scarred the rest of them were before he chose it as a career.
Good thinking. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I had a neighbor in Oregon. Her husband was a state trooper, and she was some sort of, like, I don't know, like, forensics scientist, like, something in forensics where, you know, it was her expertise that actually landed a few people in jail, and, like, she barely socialized with us. Like, my impression was is that her husband, the state trooper, was pretty nice, but I think she lived a very, very quiet, secluded life, again, where we were out in the middle of nowhere in Oregon, because, like, trying to keep a low profile, because I think there genuinely, like, were people who, if she were too obvious about it, would love to, like, you know, get back at her for, you know, putting someone in jail.
Yikes. Yeah, that's something that I don't really think about, because I don't have any family that's, like, a cop or anything, but it made me think of a movie that I can't think of the name of, but about something like that, especially when people get free and people want revenge, and that's really scary. I also like to know the equivalent of an auror is somebody like that would be in like the detective or whatever forensics field.
Because it's basically the normal police in the Wizarding World are like the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, like, and the aurors are supposed to be like the special ops. They're like the CIA and FBI agents, like, like the sort of, you know, specifically catching like very specific like targets of dark wizards, like kind of like James Bond.
Oh, all right. Moody and James Bond. That's something. That's an interesting thought.
And now it's chapter 26, the second task.
Ooh, this is a wild chapter.
Yeah. Like, again, they don't know shit about breathing underwater.
They don't. And they're, and this was interesting because usually like Hermione has kind of helped out and done her thing, or, you know, somebody has helped them get to a point where they know what the deal is, but they're up to the like last, absolute last minute with solving this problem. And it's not Hermione that ends up helping Harry out.
Yeah. And before we get into a little bit of this, Ron is suspecting, like, you know, Harry, maybe Moody thinks Snape put your name in the Goblet of Fire. Oh, Ron said Hermione. We thought Snape was trying to kill Harry before, and it turned out he was saving Harry's life, remember?
So Ron still definitely has this Snape as a villain. It has it out for Harry in his mind, which we also kind of know Ron's a little behind on some things, like emotional intelligence, or just kind of, he's progressing a little more slowly.
So obviously Ron is very biased towards Snape, but Ron fires back at her that she's super biased against Crouch because of, you know, how he treats his house elf.
Right, yeah. So competing villains here.
Yeah, competing villains. And obedient to Sirius's wish of hearing anything at odd at Hogwarts, Harry sent him a letter by Brown Owl that night explaining all about Mr. Crouch breaking into Snape's office.
So he's given the details to, like, really, and because I think didn't Sirius say anything weird, tell me what, you know, tell me about it so they can make sure he's okay. Harry is okay.
And so, like, literally within days, they get a note, send date of next Hogsmeade weekend by return owl.
Very brief. Like, not a lot of fanciful language, not a lot of anything. It's just pretty straightforward message that he got. So I think that that conveyed to me that just that little clue is in Sirius's mind is very serious. I'm sorry to be stupid, but like, he's like, we're not messing around. Like, we let's meet up. I don't have anything else to say. So mm-hmm. to me, that brevity is kind of like, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah, because again, we don't know what Sirius knows about Crouch, but then the fact that Crouch is breaking into Snape's office, and we know Sirius's history with Snape.
Right, right. Something's going on.
Yeah, something's going on. And Harry is beating himself up because he was so quick to get this letter out that he didn't even ask Sirius, how do I breathe underwater? Because all he was engrossed in his Snape and Moody bullshit.
Right. The tale as old as time. Looking at the drama instead of focusing on the problem. Then maybe that is a very personal tale as old as time. But anyway, this is a problem that he's going to have to face very soon, is how to breathe underwater.
Yep. And they have a Care of Magical Creatures lesson, and Hagrid knows just as much about unicorns, though he does. It was clear that he found their lack of poisonous fangs disappointing.
Hagrid and his monsters. Isn't that adorable?
Yep. And so they have two little unicorn foals, and they're pure gold, and they don't mind boys as much, and so they can go pet him, and it's adorable.
I liked that the baby unicorns were hesitant toward men. I think that's sometimes with some animals, I've encountered some animals that are just, you know, will warm up to women, but with men they're just like, I don't know.
My parents had a dog that they adopted, and they eventually had to return her because, you know, the dog just could not get used to my father.
Sometimes I think that's in a shelter situation a lot of times, if an animal is abused, and I'm sorry if I'm talking out of school to anybody who works in shelter medicine. I'm just basing this on people that I know who work in shelter medicine. Like, you know, if a male was abusive to that dog, then they're going to have a memory and a hesitancy with that depth of voice where they might not with women. So
perhaps, but I believe in this specific case, they got her from a breeder, but the breeders were all women, and just for a long time they just never got used to men.
And so, you know, animals can be a variety of anxious. I know a lot of people with a lot of pets, and they, you know, kind of take a lot of precautions to help them with their anxiety.
Yeah, Bacon, when we first adopted him, he would run away a little bit from my husband because he was, you know, bigger and made bigger footsteps. And finally, you know, he still cuddles with my fiance or my husband, but I'm still Bacon's favorite.
That's, oh.
Yep. And Hagrid's just like, you're going to win, Harry. And I'm just like, you know, a really long, not that long ago, we were just survive, Harry. Now there's all this pressure for him to win.
I know. Yeah. It's like, good Lord, people, you know, he's not even really supposed to be in this contest, but now it's like, you got to win everything. No pressure, Harry.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the sense of, you know, people want Harry to be like, oh, you put me in this contest right. without telling me. So screw you. I'm going to win it. It's like my husband with his, he was in the military, you know, mandatory 2-year service in Iran, and his commanding officer, to try and punish him, would be like, you know, wipe all the tables in the cafeteria or whatever. And not only did he clean the tables, but also wipe the floors and took the trash out. So basically my husband was showing him that, fuck you, this is not a punishment to me.
Good for him. Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's the same thing. It's like, you know, you stick it to them by winning.
Right. There you go. Stick it to them by winning.
By the evening before the second task, Harry felt as though he was trapped in a nightmare. He was fully aware that even if by some miracle he managed to find a suitable spell, he'd have a real job mastering it overnight. I cannot even imagine this.
This just gave me so much anxiety, like thinking of, you have to find this one answer. The pressure on this, it's so stressful. And I feel like this is just the maternal side of me that is very, very small. It was like, he's not going to get any sleep before this contest, and he's going to be so tired. He's going to screw something up. And again, that's probably just more of a personal anecdote because I don't do well on a little, not much sleep. So I would probably, I don't know what I'd do in this situation. That's pretty stressful.
Yep. And then the twins show up looking for Ron and Hermione. They want McGonagall wants to have a word with them. What did you think when you first read this before the rest of the stuff came out?
I thought it was very suspicious. That's what I thought. That's very, because Harry was not included in that. Mm-hmm. It was, and I know McGonagall has kind of a, speaking of maternal, kind of a soft spot for Harry, but I thought it was odd.
Yep. And so Harry's by himself, gets shooed out of the library, breaks back into the library with his visibility cloak, falls asleep in the library, only to be woken up by Dobby.
God bless Dobby in this situation, though. Yeah.
Yep. Dobby to the rescue.
Because he's like overslept. He's like, he's got to get going to this, to the second task.
Yes. And Dobby tells him that this will make Harry Potter breathe underwater. It's gillyweed.
Sounds really gross. That's, yeah.
Yep. And Harry is just like, you know, the last time Dobby tried to help him, he like got his arm broken by a bludger.
Right. The Dobby's history, she. I think it was at the Dursleys too. Dobby caused some problems for Harry there. So Harry is definitely, he ends up, you know, eating the gillyweed, but he's kind of like, I'm not even sure if this is going to do anything. To the point where it was, again, stressful reading it, because I'm like, I guess trust Dobby. I mean, get in the water. What else are you going to do at this point? You know?
Mm-hmm. And so he runs to the lake, you know, takes his socks and whatever off and just shoves the gillyweed in his mouth and just goes.
Running super behind. That's what happens when you don't sleep, Harry. You need to get some sleep.
Yep. And so were you surprised, like, how it, you know, basically it made him semi-amphibious?
Yeah, I thought that was, I kind of had a feeling there would be some, like, gill sort of thing, I guess, since
by its name
gillyweed, right? But a pretty interesting thing to for some reason I also thought this was just something that was like, is it kelp that's washed up? I'm a Midwesterner, so is that kind of comes up on the beach shores?
Yeah, seaweed, okay. Kelp.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought it was. Like, it was just kind of on the shores. I guess they don't really talk about where the origin of the gillyweed was, but because then I was like, why wouldn't you be swimming in the lake all the time? I sure would be if I could breathe underwater.
Yep. So he gives him gills. His hands are webbed and his feet have elongated into like flippers.
Cool. I think that's pretty. I'll take some gillyweed. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm always tempted, but I always talk myself out of it. I am tempted to blow a few $100 because I want a really nice mermaid tail.
I think that'd be sweet and probably feel kind of cool, fancy. Yeah. You could get those blankets, the mermaid tail blanket.
No, the point is to get the real mermaid tail and go swim in the lake and be the mermaid of the lake.
I think then you should make that happen someday. I think it would be cool.
Yes. Nat was all for it.
I agree with Nat in this situation.
So, yeah, just going through the lake. Noticeably no giant squid.
Right. Sadly.
Yep. We've got Grindylows. Callback from Remus Lupin, who had a lot of Grindylows in his, like, fish tank.
Okay, yes. God, I was trying to think about what those things were. Okay, yes. The Grindylows. And because then go ahead.
And of all people, he finds Myrtle, because sometimes she gets sucked down into the lake if someone like flushes her toilet.
Good to know that's where the pipes
The sewage goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty gross.
Yep. And then he finally finds them.
Yeah, this was a little intense, I thought. So he has the finds the mer people, and the mer people are basically guarding the most precious item to the various competitors, and they're all people, which is, you know, and it's all, I think this is so interesting the way this is set up. It's pretty much all people Harry also cares about, with the exception of Fleur's sister. Yeah. I mean, he just doesn't know her. But Cho, Hermione, Ron, and then Fleur's sister.
Yeah, and again, I thought this was supposed to be less dangerous, but and yeah, well, Harry already knew that they were, that they took Ron, because basically Dobby says, you know, Harry Potter has to go get his Weasley back from the mer people.
Yes, that was the giveaway there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Harry knew this. So yeah. So then, so it comes out that, you know, Harry's hostage is Ron, Cedric's hostage is Cho, and Victor's hostage is Hermione. And then, of course, Fleur's hostage is her sister.
Right.
So the mer people do not try to stop Harry, you know, freeing Ron. But the minute he turns to the others, they intervene and say he can only take one.
Yeah, because it's, he's supposed to just get his thing and then kind of like do his thing and then leave. But Harry kind of, Harry struggled to get to this point, and he's not seeing any of the other competitors. And I believe Harry didn't exactly start on time either. So he's a little late.
And yeah, like he started late, yet he's the first one to show up.
Right. So he's nervous, thinking everybody's here underwater. The time, their time's ticking. Like,
and I guess there's the implication that, again, since the mer people are not directly like attacking him or stopping him from getting his own hostage, I guess the implication is supposed to be like maybe Harry was just lucky, but that there are other things like the Grindylows and other things surrounding the mer people village that should have been obstacles to Harry and maybe to the other champions, but Harry just got lucky.
Yeah. Very odd, or a very like precarious situation, and Harry's trying to do the right thing.
In terms of your stress fear levels, would you prefer this or the dragon?
The dragon. Hands down. How about you?
I just love dragons, so like that's one thing. But at the same time, I really do like water. Like, I have more dreams of like me swimming and being a mermaid than I do of flying. Like, for me, the swimming dream is the flying dream.
Oh, interesting. Okay. You know, I guess like if I were in this situation, if I just for some reason I thought I would be like a Ron or Hermione need rescuing. I guess if I'm in the situation, if I'm Harry and like being able to eat some gross gillyweed and swim, then yeah, I would probably take that. But I put myself in this situation of being Hermione, and I was like, that's terrifying.
So Cedric finally shows up, and he has not used gillyweed, but he has this sort of like bubble around his head.
Yeah, they have interesting. I kind of thought that that was the, I don't know, I figured like Moore would use something like that, the little bubble, which is pretty, I don't know, makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And then Crumb shows up, and Crumb did not use gillyweed or this bubble. He had attempted to fully transform himself into a shark.
And instead, he's like this weird combo shark head, right? Like in just a weird, weird sort
have you,
of
situation. Yeah, have you seen Moana?
Yeah, yeah.
You know the part where Maui is the shark head?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Okay.
I think someone's made that meme of, like, Victor Crumb with, like, shark head.
That's cute. That's probably what came to mind when I was reading this. So he had appeared to have transfigured himself, but badly. So him and Hermione haven't been helping each other out too much, I guess. But we also know that transfiguration is not easy. So good on him for doing something. That also made me ask, like, I'm thinking of Peter Pettigrew. Like, that's, there is a registry of people, Animagus. He's not quite there, right? But
so the idea is there's this whole process, and again, you have to be registered. It, when you can turn into an animal at will without the use of a wand. Like, okay. What Crumb has done is use a wand to try and turn himself into a shark for a one specific instant. Like, that's not the same as going through the whole crazy potion, whatever process to make it so he could turn into a shark all the time. And even if he didn't have his wand or didn't have a potion.
Gotcha. Okay.
And even Hermione, you know, it's interesting. I never really thought too much about it, but again, just the dynamic between Hermione and Victor. I don't know if they both agreed they're not going to talk about the tournament, but yeah, and even Hermione says, like, probably Hermione, like, knew that Crumb was going to do human transfiguration and, you know, and said to Harriet, like, you could do that, but like, we're not, we haven't been taught that. And you can go, it can go very wrong, so you shouldn't do it. So I'm just thinking, like, I'm not sure how I would be in Hermione's position. Like, not necessarily, you know, just, you know, I don't know if I would feel calm to be like, hey, Crumb, like, you know, are there any other ways you can breathe underwater?
Right. Yeah. Because we have yet to have them do anybody, because this is only the second task. So we don't have anybody that has done like the same thing. Because that's what I kind of suspected at some point somebody would do, you know, two people would eat gillyweed or something like that. Yeah. But that hasn't happened yet.
Well, it came out that, as we find out later, is that Fleur also did the bubble thing like Cedric.
Yes. Okay. I forgot about that. Yeah, she did.
Yeah. And so Crumb takes Hermione, Cedric takes Cho, and so Harry doesn't see Fleur anywhere. And so he grabs her sister, the little girl, and threatens the merpeople with magic, and only then do they, like, let him go.
They're pretty intense, and I guess they're probably trying to follow the rules set for the game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're also kind of scary.
And so when they break the surface, which Harry just makes it in time because his gillyweed is wearing off.
Yeah.
It's like the pumpkin, like carriage turning into a pumpkin at midnight.
Cinderella.
Yep. Harry-rilla. And so when they break the surface, Ron and the little girl come out of their, like trance or coma or whatever. And Ron is like, what, this isn't it. What'd you bring her for? Fleur didn't turn up. I couldn't leave her, Harry panted. Harry, you prat, said Ron. You didn't take that song seriously, did you? Dumbledore wouldn't have let any of us drown. The song said, it was only to make sure you got back into the time limit, said Ron. I hope you didn't waste time down there acting the hero.
I disagree with Ron.
As a younger reader, I agreed more with Ron. And there is, and it's not to say that Harry doesn't have a hero complex, he does. But I come from it from the position that Harry is in this tournament and the adults, like, or administering this tournament could not stop him from competing because, again, it's a magical contract. So already he's in a situation with this tournament where the adults have failed him. And all the rhetoric he's getting from people like Moody and Sirius is that someone put him in this tournament to cause him harm. Right. And so I don't think it's, and also just Harry's own baggage of, again, the Dursleys never, like, protected him or anything. Like, I don't think it's crazy for Harry to assume that something could go very badly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with him in this situation. I mean, sure, he always kind of takes an opportunity to be a hero, but that is why he is a hero. So I don't know it's not that I don't trust Dumbledore. I always trust Dumbledore, but I don't think Dumbledore has a way to see what's going on underwater at the time it's happening. I don't know.
Yeah, and not that Dumbledore, I think the merpeople directly would do it because, again, they live there full time. They have an understanding with Dumbledore. I think it's just the sense of Harry's already been shown that the adults are not wholly in control, that there's magic with this, magic with this tournament that bound him via the Goblet of Fire, that the Goblet of Fire could be bamboozled.
Right.
Into, like, there's so much going on that, yeah, like, Harry is not. And acting the hero is just, like, it's one thing to, like, again, try and act the hero with, like, people are watching like they were in the, like, we're in the dragon pit or whatever, but no one was watching him, like, do the merpeople stuff. He's just like, right. Oh, like, I don't want to leave this little girl.
Right. Like, yeah.
And again, I think it's also the nature of not, because Harry grew up in the Muggle world, not always quite seeing the immediate reversibility of dangerous situations via magic.
That's a great point.
In the way that Ron can not see things in the same dire situation because it's like, oh, we can just wave our wand and do blah, blah, blah. And Harry just wasn't raised with that.
That's an excellent point. And I think that's easy, at least for me, the deeper I get into some of these things, to forget sometimes that Harry wasn't, this is not the world he grew up in. So he might do, you know, have some behaviors that are not similar to how the wizards around him would have reacted.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Did you have any other further thoughts about, you know, by disagreeing with Ron?
I just thought this was a really precarious situation to put a bunch of kids in, and very, very intense, like very kind of, sorry, but traumatizing. You know, you're kind of trying to beat the clock and save your friend or that person that's most important to you's life. And Harry, for example, was thinking that he might, these people might drown. It's just a very intense second task. That's what I thought. Not that the dragons weren't intense, but maybe, again, like I said, I grew up in the Midwest, so big bodies of water are always kind of like
intimidating. Creepy.
Yeah, they are.
And so Fleur finally shows up, and Fleur is like hysterical.
Yes.
And she didn't even make it to the Mer village. She got apprehended by Grindylows.
Poor Fleur, she's having a rough time. And, you know, she's hysterical because she thinks she didn't know what happened to her sister.
Mm-hmm. And Hermione finally comes to Harry. Well done, Hermione cried. You did it. You found out how all by yourself.
Hermione's like, I didn't have to friggin' pick up the pieces for you this time.
For once.
Right.
Yeah. And Victor's like, you have a water beetle in your hair, Hermione, said Crumb. Harry had the impression that Crumb was drawing her attention back onto himself, perhaps to remind her that he had just rescued her from the lake.
That is a little jealousy there. It's all right.
Mm-hmm. So Dumbledore goes, talks to the Mer people, and basically choose to... Fleur got 25 points, and Fleur's like, I deserve 0, said Fleur Throatery, shaking her magnificent head. Cedric Diggory gets 47 points. Victor Crumb gets 40 points. And Harry Potter used Gillyweed to great effect. Demonstration of moral fiber. We give him 45 points.
So he didn't win this one.
He did not win. But he is now tied for Crumb in first place in the grand scheme of things.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I mean.
And Ron's just like, there you go, Harry. You weren't being thick after all. You were showing moral fiber.
Ugh, no shit, Ron. Sorry. It's like, get it together, man. I like that. As soon as Harry did that, I'm like, okay, well, this is going to get rewarded. He might. I thought he was going to win, but I guess I was wrong.
Yeah, no. Not even the boy wonder can win all the time.
It's probably for the best.
And it's left on Bagman saying third and final test will take place at dusk on the 24th of June. Which that just made me think that their semester goes on really, really long.
Yeah, this has been going on for a while.
Yeah, if they're still at school in late June, like, you know, at the most universities I've worked at are on a semester system. And, you know, they finish by May, early May.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it was over, Harry thought dazedly. And next time he was in Hogsmeade, Harry decided as he walked back up the stone steps into the castle, he was going to buy Dobby a pair of socks for every day of the year.
Aw, Dobby deserves it. Really helped him out there.
Yes, helped him out in the normal way, not the picking your poison way.
Right, yes. Right.
Alrighty then, and now let us move on to Gothic Geek Out.
My Gothic Geek Out was the rescue task, because it kind of framed all of the people as like a damsel in distress kind of situation. And, you know, there usually is a heroine in Gothic literature that is kind of seems to need rescuing at some point. That's why when you read more modern Gothic novels, it's refreshing when the female lead is not in a precarious situation that she needs rescuing from. So that was my Gothic essence of these two chapters.
Yeah. I chose the same thing. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah.
Psychic.
When was the last time we did the same thing?
I don't think we ever have.
I don't think. I think maybe once before. But yeah, it's rare. But yeah, this is the only one I thought of. Because again, kidnapping of something precious. Like, you know, I guess I approach it less from the damsel in distress trope. But more in the sense of, again, just something being taken from the protagonist so that they can't just run away from the haunted house or whatever like a normal person would.
Right.
Like, I think of in Coraline, when her parents get abducted and she has to go to the other mother to, like, outsmart her and get them back.
Oh, okay.
You have never seen Coraline?
I haven't.
It's one of the few things where I prefer the movie over the book.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, like, in the movie, like, the claymation, like, it's supposed to take place in Ashland, Oregon, where I like, went to high school.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So, like even one of the streets in the town, like, I can recognize it, like, in claymation form.
That's awesome. I will eventually have to watch that. It's been on my to-watch/read list for a long time.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites to watch during Halloween season. But anyway, so yeah, just the kidnapping of, you know, something precious that's dear to you. And again, you're absolutely right, the whole damsel in distress dynamic. And I like, it's not particularly gothic, but I like how, again, it was horrible what they did, you know, kidnapping people. But it was just interesting, the dynamic that of the champions, two of them took romantic partners. One of them took a best friend and the other took a sibling.
Yeah. So
just goes into Eros, Agape, all those various elements of how, you know, we define love.
Yeah, yeah. That's very interesting. I thought it was very interesting that they took the two romantic interests, and I thought, wow, those two fall pretty hard is what I thought, because the time hasn't been very long.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, same with kidnapping and damsels in distress. Awesome.
Sweet. Very nice.
And now we move on to Tarot of Day, where the card I picked at random was card number 7 in the Major Arcana, the Chariot.
The Chariot, okay.
So, the Chariot is a card of willpower, determination, and strength. You have discovered how to make decisions in alignment with your values with the Lover's card, and now you are taking action on those decisions. When the Chariot appears in a tarot reading, take it as a sign of encouragement. You have set your objective and are now channeling your inner power with a fierce dedication to bring them to fruition. When you apply discipline, commitment, and willpower to achieve your goals, you will succeed.
I'm thinking of Harry, and granted it was at the 11th hour that he, you know, got to the gillyweed, but that was kind of his achieving his goal, but then also sticking to his values by rescuing Fleur's sister at the same time. So that to me seems similar to the card.
Yeah, good. I'm just thinking, let's see. Now isn't the time to be passive in the hope that things will work out in your favor. Take focused action and stick to the course, no matter what challenges may come your way. Because believe me, there will be challenges. And again, Harry's not being passive and just taking Ron and going, you know, and just hoping that things will work out in your favor. Because again, Harry is perfectly justified in thinking that the adults aren't always in a position to protect me despite their best efforts, and so I have to take it upon myself to do shit.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You're exactly right.
So, yeah. Good card. We also have the card I pulled of the Black Moon Astrology cards. And this one that I picked was a planet card. Specifically, ooh, it was Mars.
Mars. Okay.
The Mars card suggests there's something you may have to fight for.
Pretty on the nose.
Yeah. Mars makes us shove hard in a way that other planets don't. One might call him the bully among the planets. Mars is the ruler of sexuality and aggression, a lustful planet that drives us, allows us to face difficult challenges in life and to follow our passions no matter what stands in the way. This card also means to push back in terms of defense. When Mars is strong in a chart or a reading, you may either face aggressive situations with a need to confront or defend, or an intense, rousing sexual encounter which may or may not involve romance. This is a time where you feel not only forced but driven. It is a good time to consider goals and desires and not allow them to fall into the shadows right now. Action is needed. It is not a good time to sit back and wait.
I mean, obviously, it feels very much like the task that they had to complete is very on message with this card, right?
Yeah, being very aggressive and, again, just also taking focused action with Harry, like, you know, swallowing his pride and, you know, taking Cedric's advice to find the clue. And that sort of stuff. And just direct confrontation. Like if not for his stupidity of dropping his egg, he almost was going to get in a confrontation with Crouch. possibly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that. When we talked about, we were talking about kind of the, this is just kind of another, I think, what the card mentioned with the sexuality thing and Moaning Myrtle and her being a perv, you know, very forcefully and unwittingly peeping on some of the champions.
Right. Yeah, this is true. But yeah, both very good cards that were basically on the nose.
Yeah. Good job. Good job.
Yay. My intuition.
I was going to say the witchiness is what it got.
This is coming out more. Alrighty then. And then our last exercise is fan fiction time. So I just thought of one just by what we were discussing because I didn't write this down. But what if Harry had bumped into Crouch?
I'm laughing because I'm like, I don't know, man. He's such a... I don't know. I mean, I think it would have probably... It would have been very awkward because what is he doing out and about when he's supposedly sick? And, you know, how would Harry have reacted to that situation? I don't know.
I would like to think Harry would be smart enough to keep the invisibility cloak and just quietly observe and not, like, do something really stupid.
Yeah. I would like to think that as well. But, and then what would he have observed? I don't know yet.
Yeah, because, again, it's the question of what was Crouch after? Was he after potion ingredients? Was he specifically wanting to dig something up about Snape? Or, right. Like, what? Yeah, I guess the his whole motivation for being there, was it about the tangible ingredients or resources, or was it about the person, the potions master?
I guess we'll find out, because I definitely have no freaking clue at all.
Okay, and then, so yeah, what was one of your fanfic?
Well, I speculated, what if Harry only grabbed Ron? So what if he kind of did, you know, he did the bare minimum. He didn't stop and stave Gabrielle.
Mm-hmm. What if Harry had done that? Would have gotten more points and would have beat Victor Krum and would have.
Okay.
So
you think he would have been, that would have been viewed. I guess we're also assuming that Gabrielle would have been rescued too.
Like, yeah. The assumption is that Gabrielle would have been retrieved, whether it was Fleur herself or whoever. Yeah, definitely. I don't think it would count against Harry that he didn't do it, because none of the others did. It's not so much that you didn't do this and therefore, you know, we're docking you. It's like, this is what you're supposed to do and you did something extra.
Right. Okay.
I don't think it's the negation of, you know, not doing that would be counted against him.
Okay.
So he just would have won outright. And yeah, again, because it's just so not Harry, because he would never leave a little. Especially because it's like, it's a little girl. It's not, it's not even like Ron or Hermione, like someone who he knows could, like when they wake up, could somewhat handle themselves. Like, it's just this little defenseless girl.
Right. Yeah, I just sometimes
wonder if it was like another more like another like student, or maybe Harry would have been more tempted to just take Ron and go, but because it was such a vulnerable person.
Right. Yeah. That I see, feel like it, if he did not see that other champion coming, like if it, let's just say it wasn't Fleur, or Fleur was supposed to rescue like Pavarti or something, like whatever. Yeah. And he didn't see her, like, on her way. I just feel like it's so off-brand for Harry to just leave somebody. He would just be a completely different person if he only, you know, didn't make sure everybody else was okay. So I feel like my speculation is kind of like, well, that's not the character at all. So why'd you speculate that? But oh,
the only thing I could think of is if there wasn't the issue of the Gillyweed, like, running out or having a time limit, then, like, Harry, the most Harry could do in that scenario was take Ron, get Ron to the service, and then go back.
Right, yeah. He'd have another little Gillyweed in his pocket.
Yeah.
Gone back down.
Yep. One scenario I thought of, what if Snape had caught Harry?
Oh, man. Snape is such a pill. We know that. But, how much trouble can he be in? Because he still has to do this competition, right? Like,
yeah, like he, yeah, again, he's magically bound. Like, that's the thing. Like, even if Snape felt him, ripped the cloak off and was like, aha, like,
right.
Dumbledore would step in to make sure that Snape didn't do too much. Maybe Harry would have gotten a slap on the wrist with detention and stuff. But yeah, it's
he's pretty protected.
Yeah, he's pretty protected at this point. I think I sometimes wonder if, again, because Harry has these very magical items like the invisibility cloak and the Marauder's Map. Like, I wonder if Snape could have made an argument that, again, it's not safe, quote unquote, if, you know, Snape would love to just take that invisibility cloak and that map away from Harry. So if he could get away with doing that, he would.
Absolutely. That's like Snape's dream, is to just like remove all of the cool stuff Harry has from his like possession. So.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Alrighty then. But yeah, that's all I had.
Me too. Yeah,
the chapter is very pivotal to plot and you know nothing of it and it's so much fun.
I'm so glad I haven't caught on yet. So I can't wait until we finish this and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I missed that.
Yep. And then next week we will have the fabulous Amanda and Kevin Wilson joining us and it'll be awesome. And I don't know, did you know that Amanda is having a baby?
I did. I'm very excited to tell her. Congratulations in real life or in podcast life.
Yeah. So our next chapters will be 27 and 28. Padfoot Returns and the Madness of Mr. Crouch.
Finally.
Alrighty then. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophia Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophia Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophiaMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophia Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophiaMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.